Warm welcome. Great to have you here. A special welcome if this is your first time at St. Peter's Barge, London's only floating church. So welcome to our Question Time series. And for this, the second week in the series, we're delighted to welcome Simon Webley, who is the director of the Institute of Business Ethics here in London. And he's also on the board of an organisation called CLICE, which is the Kirby Lane Institute for Christian Ethics, which is based up in Cambridge. And Josh Horden, who is the associate director there, has come down as well. He'll be manning a table at the back there with various free leaflets for you to take away if you want to, and there's some information inside your service sheet. The format is going to be Simon's going to speak to us now for just over 20 minutes, so until about 5:30, and then we'll have 10 minutes Q&A. So it's over to you then, just hands up from the floor, and we'll take questions for 10 minutes, and we'll be finished by 22. So without further ado, thank you very much, Simon.
Good, thanks very much, and thank you for inviting me. I've heard about this church, but I've never seen it and I've never experienced it. I'm delighted to have the opportunity my coming here affords it. What I want to do then is to talk a bit about these four areas. Why bother with organisational ethics at all? What are the core values of organisations and how do they fit? And we'll have a look and see if any of those core values in any way harmonise with what Christians would call their core values or our core values. We'll look at I'll just mention the key business ethics issues of the day. It's a moving scene, and at the Institute of Business Ethics, where I'm not the director, I'm the research director. I work closely with the director. We're very busy with people wanting advice. We're a not-for-profit, a charity set up by business to be a focal point for thinking about the application of values to day-to-day business life. And then finally, if you were involved in any organisation and you wanted a policy which was dealt with applied values and ethics, what would be required to make that work? Just some thoughts. I haven't got very long, so I'm going to go fairly fast and I may miss out. I have got 6 copies of these slides, and I'm sure if anybody wants them, you could have them. So let's go straight into this. Why bother? Why take any notice of this? Well, the normal answer you get in discussions of this is, well, you know, it's the right thing to do. We ought to do it. It's good. It's a good thing to do, which is a vague and correct but vague answer on this. And finance directors don't particularly like that answer very much. They want a bit of hard graft on it. So what else can you say? Wait a minute, we're still on that slide. It lessens some risk. We know from research that it lessens risk and enhances reputation. There's a particular type of risk which you can't insure against in any business, and that's integrity risk. So you have to do self-insurance as the only way to overcome this. And in the last 15 years or so, most large organisations have taken this more seriously, and many now of smaller ones are seeing that it's well worth with doing this. The other parts of the business case are simply that it does help to retain a good staff and indeed attract them. When Shell had their bad year with several things going wrong in the North Sea, in Nigeria and elsewhere, in the recruiting of quality staff in the next round, the milk round of the universities, they found that they were not attracting the right people they wanted. And for 2 years, this apparently went on. They'll tell you that. And why? Because good people do not want to work for organisations they're not proud of in some way or another. You know, you go to the social gathering, and who do you work for? Well, Shell. Oh, Shell. And it doesn't go down very well. There is evidence, and I'm not going to go into it, that it does enhance over a 5-year period at least financial performance compared with those who do not take this seriously. That research is available, and it's basically a good citizenship. Very quickly, let me just say that the difference between compliance and ethics, I often say that ethics starts where the law ends. The legal position of any organisation is what you must do, and the ethical responsibility of an organisation is how you do your business. It's what you do, and it's based on core values. So let's get on to the core values part of this. And this is the most interesting part of this, I find, of business ethics generally. All businesses operate on the basis of some values. Sometimes it's implicit and sometimes it's explicit. And these are normally one of two types, business values and ethical values. And this rather... How far have we got now? Funnily enough, there's a slide missing there, but let me just tell you about it. The business values are essentially the sorts of things that you'll find in the front of annual reports or in chairman's statements, and it talks about efficiency, profitability, reliability, performance, teamwork, quality, and so on. You need those. But you also, I propose to you, you need some ethical values, and there are eight that you'll find very regularly used by businesses in their introductions to codes of ethics. These would be trust, honesty, transparency, integrity, fairness, openness, responsibility, respect. They're the ones you find most common, and the most common of those is integrity. I think it's because people think it sounds good and not quite sure what it is. It's very difficult to define. If you're an engineer, you can define it. You know, this boat has integrity, I hope. That is, it all holds together one way or another. A bridge, if the span is slightly wrong, won't have integrity. It affects the whole. But it's a good word, and it's much used. Now, where do these come from? Well, those who know about these things say both basic values in any society are often and nearly always rooted in religious beliefs of one sort and another. Individuals tend to pick up their value systems from an early age, usually in their families, usually from their mum. And these are then, you're taught to follow those core values of the family at that stage. Now, these then become personally accepted probably later on in life. And sometimes that's a crisis when you're up against a value and you're challenged. And a lot of people simply adopt the peer group values that they're moving at that time. Now, in the UK, the predominant core values of our society are basically derived from the Christian religion, from Christian faith. The issue we want to look at just briefly now is, are these core Christian values given recognition in the business world? Okay? Now, quite a few of them are. But I think there are two which I have not yet seen referred to in any corporate code of ethics. And we study them. And one of those is this idea that what Christians call love, a relationship, idea of love. Sometimes you'll find words like consideration and respect go along as a substitute for that, but essentially that word isn't there. I did come across one recently where it said we love our customers. but I don't think they meant the same thing by that. And I was at a conference in the US quite recently when a man who looks after a very big retail operation in South Korea, which was linked with Tesco now, said, we love our work, we love our job, we try to love everybody. And I thought, I listened to it, and I thought, well, you're using the love word. But it was there. The other is a word which you simply do not get in codes, and it's a core Christian value, which is forgiveness. The basis of the Christian faith is that we can have forgiveness for doing wrong, for breaking rules, and that forgiveness is free. Now, in the business world, it is not a word that I have heard used very often. You get it a bit in second chance. That is, you've done something, you've got a warning, we'll give you a second chance. Now, it doesn't mean to say that you're forgiven for what you did. It just means you've got a second chance. But that's about as far as it goes. And the difficulty is, and I need help on this, is how you would say that should actually be expressed in day-to-day business life, work life, the forgiveness element of it. Because I think it's essentially missing. Now, why is this relevant for organisations? Why is all this important? Well, It is important to work out what people's values are, because you can't assume that employees will come with the same values in organisations. I'm just doing some work on the different core values of different religions that are found in the United Kingdom and how that affects behaviour at the workplace. For instance, there is you'll find that values are not distinctly the same, or the emphasis on certain values are not the same. People often want to express their religion, for instance, in the workplace, but there is limits on what an organisation will allow you to do in that type of area. It comes down to, for instance, what days off you have. Christians are normally Good Friday and Christmas Day and so on, but that is not so of other religions, and how do you cope with all that? It's a separate subject, and I don't want to go into that now, but you certainly can't assume that all employees will bring the same values to an organisation. And you certainly can't assume that the people with whom you work in joint ventures or your suppliers or others have the same values as you do. And this is now becoming quite an important area. So some work has been done to try and harmonise this, and the recent version of the UK Corporate Governance Code states that boards should set the company's values and standards and ensure that its obligations to shareholders and others are understood and met. And that goes right back to what was called the Cadbury Report in 1992. And that's seen now as good corporate governance, is to work on these values and let everybody know. Now, how is this going to work out in practice? That's what we're interested to know. Well, in any organisation, it seems quite clear to me that ethical leadership is the critical thing. This comes out over and over and over again in the research. When something goes wrong, when there are ethical lapses, what do you find? You find that somebody isn't, at a fairly high level, is not working or making decisions according to the core values of the organisation. And this is true now, we've discovered, at all levels of an organisation, from a basic supervisor right up to the top. And in order to get a sort of culture where these values are important, you need to have an open culture where people are free to speak. And I've boiled this down essentially to that my test is that any employee in the organisation should be free to use the ought and should words about their work. Should we be doing this? Ought we be doing this? Without any form of retaliation or feeling that you're just the awkward member of the awkward squad and always saying that. They aren't the easiest people to get on with, people who raise the oughts and shoulds questions, but they are very important, I think, to the maintaining an open culture. And business does need those in it that have these ethical sensitivities and to take a lead. Now, I'm not saying that should be exclusively for Christians, but I do know that Christians, where they take their faith seriously, will raise those sorts of issues and have the courage to do so. So I believe that we need people to do that simply to keep our businesses open and to raise the awkward question. It isn't that easy to do. And there are a number of cases of people who have done this and they have suffered. But there's also a lot of cases of people who are respected because they do ask those questions. And that's the sort of culture that you want. And what's the thrust of this? Well, if the basis of most of our relationships, business relationships and even personal relationships, is trust, that we trust somebody, they say something, we believe them. This slide now will show you that trust is not a highly respected quality in our society. We could spend a long time on this one. Doctors are trusted. Politicians, well, this was done in September 2009, and waiting for the new results to come from Ipsos Mori now. They weren't very respected in last year. I want to see if they've gone up. But business leaders there, only a quarter of people you meet in the street believe that business leaders tell the truth. That's a very low rating. That had come down from 30% from the previous year. But trust is a critical value in any relationships. And if it goes, then you're heading for disaster. So this generation of trust through people who will speak up and say things that are important and that they feel are important, I think is absolutely essential for a sustainable business to have there. Let me just say a little bit about the key ethical issues that are with us. Here is the usual list, and there's in an Ipsos Mori survey just, well, it hasn't been published, it was done before the Institute, yet remuneration issues are still high, particularly to do with bonuses and so on. The general public do not at the moment think that that's working well. But here are the other ones. Harassment and discrimination in the workplace is still very high on the list of concerns that the ordinary man in the street has, probably from experience, either personal experience or possibly from experiences that they've read about or heard about from family and other people. The other ones, I think, are pretty straightforward. You will probably not be surprised at them. Let me just say a little bit about speak-up policies, because this is where this works. It is now good practice for every organisation to have two ways for people to speak up. One is directly with their line manager, the normal way, but if that's inappropriate or doesn't work, another independent way, sometimes through a phone call, sometimes through email, or sometimes simply another person they can go to and talk about it. Those studies of that, of those methods, shows that that does work. That does produce, it isn't a whistleblowing that something, it isn't actually whistleblowing per se. That's when an event, a nasty event has actually happened. It comes from people in the village of a mining community blowing a whistle when there's been an accident at a mine. That's where that originated. Speaking up is simply saying, I'm not happy about, or I need a bit of advice about, or I think my boss is fiddling his expenses, but I don't want to rock that boat, but I just think I ought to raise it, or something. I don't know what it's going to be. But a speaking up policy is critical to the long-term effectiveness of an organisation, if it's one that values its values, if I can put it that way. So, two more minutes of just the basis of an effective policy, because I think this is very important. The primary aim... Whoops, we're way behind on this slide, aren't we? I didn't realise that we had to do each one of those, sorry. Right. What we're trying to do with applied business ethics is that we try to embed these core values in an organisation to produce this culture of integrity. That's the aim and policy that most have, and it's really easy to say. But how is it actually done? Well, the main way is through a code of ethics or conduct or practice or whatever you want, which is there to give guidance to staff. It's not to be, you must do this or else. It's simply to guide in the particular areas where there are going to be problems, you're going to come up against problems, and to provide a framework to resolve those dilemmas. Nearly all the training that we're asked to do or provide is now done on cameo training, vignettes, little stories, little real-life things where people have a dilemma. And we ask, what would you do? That is a very effective means of doing it, and will provide a framework for dealing with day-to-day issues, whether it's at the board level or at the very most junior levels. Now, these codes. Few are written with the user in mind. They're nearly all written because somebody has asked to set out some details, and I'm afraid... Sorry about this, lawyers, but it's normally lawyers who write these, and they're not the best communicators with everyday language. So when we review codes, we immediately go to say, how user-friendly is this code? Some are just a collection of policies. Some are just a set of policies which are put together and clipped together and handed out. No good at all. Won't work. Some are couched in do this or else language, and some are very glossy. The heaviest I've got is BP's while others are just simple memoranda. The best code is a fairly small pocket-sized one which gives the basic ways in which you should react, for instance, to a conflict of interest, with some Q&As and means of getting further information. codes are not good enough in their own right. You have to have a series of other means whereby this will be backed up. And remember, Enron had a code of business ethics. I have a copy. I got it on eBay. I got it under memorabilia. And it had not been used because it was still wrapped in cellophane. its introduction by Kenneth Lay is first class, pretty well first class. The rest of it is pretty well unreadable. And I don't think anybody took any notice of it at all. So the code in itself isn't working. It has to be backed up by good example from the top and means to raise issues and all sorts of reporting and monitoring systems, and not least training. I haven't got time to go into that. Now, finally, what causes ethical lapses? Well, the first, as I've implied, is a leadership where ethical values are not seen as fundamental. They happen quite often. And second, the fear of speaking up when somebody sees something going wrong. And these are the two main causes why this happens. So what do you need to make this all work? Well, the first thing is that business behavior is throughout the organization. It isn't just at one particular area. It's to do with conduct and commitment and decision-making and operations and relationships and all the rest of it. And everybody is responsible for business ethics in their business, not just the ethics officer, as the US call them, or whatever you want to call them here. Everybody must be seen to be. I have to come to answer the question that I was given at the beginning in a second, but let me just conclude by giving you these sort of reminders here. I probably don't need to emphasize them too much to this audience. A good reputation is vital to any sustained organization. How do you get that? By living up and doing your business well and by doing it ethically, even though that costs you. Trust, I'd say, is the key value. Guidance to staff, yep, everybody's responsible. And those who believe corporate behavior matters must feel free to speak up. Codes are necessary. Whoops. Codes are necessary, but not... not doing well here, am I? they're an example. I can't say more about higher about example. And to act ethically is costly and can do it. And I think Christians are among those who know something of what cost means to stand up for this. I'm not saying that's exclusive to Christianity. I'm just saying it's basically people who believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and have put their trust in him do know what it means sometimes to what that means in daily life and can cost them. They won't go along with the crowd in various ways in which this happens. Christians at work are just the same. I encourage Christian groupings at work, and that is now seen as good practice. But if Christians don't speak up, and if Christians don't take values seriously, then who will? Then who will? And I found my experience that those who have a personal faith in Christ and who do take this seriously see their role in business life as being salt and light. That is, bringing to any business flavor and also light. And this is, it seems to me, to be critical in any organization that you want people who do that. The best qualified to do that are people who take their faith seriously. They're not the only people, but they're certainly the best qualified. If we don't do it, if Christians don't do it, then who does? And if we fail, then we can't expect necessarily that a business or any organization will survive because, I don't know, we kept quiet. So I think there's courage, and we need encouragement to do it. I do think it's important. I had to go rather fast through this, but I hope it's given you an element of why I think this is important and necessary, and that it is practical and does work. So, thank you very much. I'm happy to do questions if that comes.
Many thanks, Simon. So we've got a few moments for questions. Who wants to get the ball rolling?
Yes. Well, I'm not an ethicist. That is, I will make judgments on this, but what I can tell you about is is this clash of personal ethical standards with corporate ethical standards. And there are a lot of clashes. Sometimes people's personal standards are much higher than the corporate standards, and sometimes they're much lower. We monitor serious press reports on a weekly basis of ethical lapses. And you'd be surprised at how often it is a clash of personal ethics. Well, that's not wrong, you know, and what the business think that are there. And it's almost on a daily basis. Anybody work for Serco here? Good. Well, Serco ran into a big problem last week, where they simply sent out a letter to all their suppliers asking for rebates from the year. Now, ethics, where did that come in? Now, Serco is a responsible company. They're subscribers to the Institute. We know them well. And we got onto them and said, what went wrong? And they said, it's ghastly. It was two parts of the business, one knowing not what the other did, one with a different standard in the leadership, had a different standard or different ways of thinking than the other one. And so almost immediately, within 24 hours, that letter was withdrawn. But not the reputation damage is quite severe. I mean, just look at share price. It was really quite severe. Now, what was going wrong here? It was somebody's personal ethical standard against a corporate ethical standard. That's the heart of that. We'll know more about it because it's going to be a good case study to do. But we'll know more about it. But this is almost on a weekly basis we can find this. And very often it is the clash that you've described in a very personal way in the pub brought into the business situation. I'm not sure that's a full answer, but it's how I would see that.
Next question.
Right. There is a general movement now to recognise in businesses that you're going to have employees with different stances, particularly on religious stances. And it's now seen as good practice through a thing called the... I can get it right. The Employers Forum has been working, and they come out of the Employers Forum for Age, as it happens, and they got together and put out some basic ways in which companies can accommodate people with different and quite strong religious views. And one of them is to encourage groupings, two types: one where the individuals of different faiths get together and talk about their particular problems, and interfaith groups. And rooms are provided, times provided, and so on. That seemed to be basically a good thing to do, and it's going to grow. Now, how do you convince that? Well, there's an Institute of Business Ethics booklet, which I have written, which the manuscript is in pretty well near final form, which is going to put the case for that. And we will discuss it and propagate it. I see that growing. And it's not, you're not discouraged because it sort of makes you different, but it's there because all sorts of groups meet in a business, not just religious groups, either. So what's the difference? So, sorry to say to you, but when this comes out, which will hopefully be in the next 2 to 3 months, I can make sure, or you can look on the website and get it. That will give you the case. Well, I hinted that there was, and there is. We did two studies. I actually resisted doing them for several years because I thought they were the wrong... Does business ethics pay? Was what that was. And I resisted because I thought it was the wrong question. Yeah, you do it because it's the right thing to do, not because it pays. However, the pressure to come up with something serious on this matter was quite intense. And I was in the States and I found some work that had been done at a Chicago university and... which I thought was doable here, and I've used the same model. And we've done it twice so far over a different period of years. And yes, those with an explicit ethics policy outperformed those who did not have that. We took proxy for that having a code and under four different measures of value. That was one. And then some years later, I decided it was worth repeating. But I couldn't find those that didn't have enough people who didn't have a code, who had a code. Sorry, and most had a code. I couldn't find those who didn't. So I took those who had a code and provided training. against those who either didn't have a code or didn't provide training. You know, it's an awful figure that 50% of those companies that have a code do not provide business ethics training. Extraordinary. It got slightly better last year, but as in the 2010, which isn't out yet, that I looked at the numbers, it's come back again. It's four out of 10 don't provide. So anyway, I took those two proxies, and yes, it's still held in three of the four measures. So there is prima facie evidence. It probably needs to be done again. I need somebody to sponsor it. Sorry. but because you get a student to do the hard numbers work. It's quite intensive number work. But yes, there is a case. But as I say, it's the second best question, in my view.
Our time has gone, unfortunately. Next week we're looking at the question, should public life be a faith-free zone? And we're welcoming Jonathan Chaplin, who's the director of the Kirby Lane Institute for Christian Ethics. So please do come back next week and invite others. There are cards inside your service sheets with all the details. And for now, it just remains to say a big thank you to Simon for coming down. And do remember the information table on the right. Do take whatever you might find useful. Thank you, Simon.